dick. Oh no.
And you were worried tonight. You were worried.
Welcome to the big show.
No.
Yeah, we started bollocks. This is the big show, and Paul just ate a chili. If you want to know more about that bit, you have to listen to the VIP show because it's going to be on there for sure. Windrider in the chat room says milk, yogurt, cucumber, mint. I think they're all together. And are Paul's eyes currently bleeding?
No, but his gums are.
Oh. Yeah. That's all gone wrong.
Brilliant.
Fonseca from Leicester says the VI show is going to be fantastic. The big show, we're here to discuss the week's tech. This show was going to have a threesome at some point, and this is it. Paul Gazmaz and me will be doing the threesome.
Yeah.
There we go. We got a title already. The week in technology, what's been happening? Well, there's tons. Virgin have got their arses slapped over the fact that they keep advertising unlimited, but then cap all of their plans. You thieving bastards, and you still haven't got me on the f***ing underground internet.
I thought you were on the underground.
No, they still can't get me frigging a what's it number? Because they send me an email bill, but they send it to an email address that I haven't got access to because it's their own Virgin email shit. Bastards. F***ing hate Virgin. I might have to do a lot of editing tonight. But it's all right, I've already done the Mac show. ISPs have been ordered to take down 21 more sites that allegedly do file sharing for music, which is doing absolutely nothing. And Nokia.
Who's ordering that?
I don't know. A British phone. Fergal Sharkey.
He's a
twat.
Allegedly.
And Nokia. New sales record. After the Microsoft, ahead of a Microsoft takeover, there we go.
It's a one.
New sales record for the 1020. They've doubled their sales. There we go.
Did you pay for that?
Did I pay for what?
That phone.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, he said. We sold him one.
Joking aside, though, they are supposed to be quite good, to be honest with you. So.
They are quite good. Is that this? That's the top recommendation.
They're very good.
That's their marketing pitch.
Some bugger's sending somebody to the printer now.
Buy a Nokia, because we're not shit.
Sorry about that. Let me mute my sound.
iCyberPaul says you need to edit at 0.0 seconds, 0.5 seconds, 0.6, 1.1, 3.2.
Can he find an ambulance, please?
Oh, God. Okay. Paulum's looks like a demented Thunderbird puppet.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, it's quite good, actually.
And XP's infection rate is 6 times higher than Windows 8, so stop slagging off Windows 8, allegedly. There we go.
What?
Google had a thing last night as well, which we'll talk about in a minute as well, I suppose. But is it to bring a story party? I think it's fair to say Gazmaz has story of the week. Gazmaz is frozen. Gazmaz is gone.
I'm dying.
There he is. We've done the wrong day. We should have done a different day.
I'm suffering.
He's back.
He just dropped out.
No, really?
Really?
So. As he's got the story of the week, we're going to go start off with Gazmaz.
Right, so is it ip-dip-do, or do you want to go for the one that I said at the start?
I think that is the story of the week.
Okay. Dell Latitude 6430U laptops smell of cat urine.
All Dell laptops smell of cat urine.
No.
It's specific.
A number of Dell users have complained.
Specific piss.
that their Latitude 6430U ultrabooks smell of cat urine. Dell engineers have ruled out biological contamination and said the smell was not a health hazard. The problem apparently lays in the manufacturing process, which has now been shamed, the company said.
No piss, Sherlock.
It's funny, actually, because if you think about the amount of people that go on about smelling their Apple products when they take it out of the box, I think this is the other end of the spectrum, isn't
How
it?
How do people really? Know what cat piss smells like? Tastes like? Who's licking their Dell?
Well, anybody who doesn't have a cat probably does, because they've got lots of cats in the garden doing it. But, you know, that's another issue. Anyway, users affected by the issue should send their laptop back for replacement parts. It doesn't say a replacement. It says replacement parts.
Are they going to overwrite it with lion piss?
Yeah.
To scare the cat bit off.
That's right. That's what you got to do, isn't it? Yeah, it's lion poo, apparently, I think, that does it. Keeps cats away.
Lion poo. Where'd you get lion poo?
That keeps cats out of your garden.
Yeah, but where'd you buy it? I went to Africa on a safari and I came back with lion shit just so I could keep the cats out of my garden.
Well, there are zoos, Ewan. There are zoos.
Do they sell that?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Is there an eBay shop?
On a freaking keyring.
The lion shit shop.
Anyway, another customer said, I'm keeping with this story, I'm sticking with it.
Got it.
I thought for sure one of my cats had sprayed it, but there was something faulty with it, so I had it replaced, and the next one had the same exact issue. It's embarrassing taking it to a client because it smells so bad.
You take the Dell got you.
The Dell, not the cat.
Is it?
You've got a Dell smelling piss.
iCyberPool says, it's mountain lion piss, if it's on a Mac. And Windrider says, Chinese herbalists have it. The smell of cat piss or lion dung.
Yes.
Can we be specific?
Yes, we need to know on that.
I want to buy lion dung.
I think this is story of the year, actually. I quite like this. And the funny thing is, the article that I've got is actually, obviously, it's got a picture of a cat standing in front of a computer. Well, what else would you have? That's, you know. I could have been a little bit more inventive on that.
I did see the pictures of a cat reaching out from underneath the computer, but...
Yeah, apparently, it sounds as if it's the palm rest, which is the problem, because Dell recommends that users send affected laptops away for a replacement palm rest. So, you know, it's sometimes these rubberized rests that you can get. I think it's probably that, and they've probably sprayed it with something stupid. And
cat piss. No, there was to be fair to Dell, there was an official statement which said there is no biological contaminant in our laptops.
No, just a smelly, unnatural
smell of biological contaminant.
Yeah, an unsmelly biological.
Windrider in the chat is actually making a very serious point here that I feel quite bad for laughing now. He said he's heard that one customer had his cat put down over it, which seems a bit harsh. If your cat pisses on your laptop.
Well, if you're not a cat lover, it doesn't bother me. But no, that is a bit harsh. Yes, yeah, but having your cat put down because you think it's peed on you. So I hope Dell have got him a replacement cat. And they sent
Cat 2.0.
With day one cat already.
Yes, I wish somebody would stop sending printing stuff to my printer. But...
Cat 5.
Or is he cat 5?
If he pissed on it, it'd be cat 5e.
Yeah.
Is that it? He's got a cat 5 cable and he's screwed.
No, if the cat pisses on the laptop while it's plugged in, it's cat 5e. Oh,
So, is this the level of the show this week, I think?
No, I think you've started us off on a bad note there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right. Intel have got an ARM-based chip that's 64-bit as well. That's come out this week.
Intel?
Intel have started a foundry to create ARM-based chips at 64-bit.
So are they paying a licence fee to ARM to do that? I assume they are.
I presume. I don't know. It says Intel opens a foundry to ARM. Intel build chips based on the ARM designs at its own factory, so there must be a licence to them. You're absolutely right.
There must be, yeah.
Yeah, Altera will incorporate the ARM 64-bit quad-core Cortex A53 cores for the upcoming Stratix 10 FPGA system on chip.
Rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but they'll fabricate the processors on Intel's 14-nanometer process. There you go.
Right. So, well, so presumably that is for not laptops, for tablets, I'd have thought.
Playing catch. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Playing catch up to Apple, I would have said at that point.
Yeah.
Making a 64-bit chip.
Intel have really lost the market on tablets, haven't they?
Well, isn't the ARM-based one
the way to go for Intel, isn't it?
Isn't it the ARM-based one that's powering the lower-end version of the Surface?
Oh, the RT is.
The RT is an ARM-based.
Yes, chip. Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, but the RT is basically an embarrassment, isn't it?
Apparently the RT is the only one that runs properly. It's the only one that runs the Windows 8 system properly. The Pro one is crap, by all accounts.
Yeah, but isn't the RT the only one that's returned to shops going, oh, I tried to install Paint Shop Pro 5, and they send it back because it can't.
It can't cope with that, no.
Well, not fit for purpose.
No.
Because
they buy it, it's got Windows on it. It's like, it's got Windows on it.
It's not fit for purpose, then.
No, it's not. It's like it's got Windows on it. It's bad enough it's got Windows on it, and I know, tweet me now and call me a you-know-what. But, you know, it's not... It's not Windows. It's like, I want to install... I've got, like, I'm old-fashioned. I've got CDs full of crap I want to install on a tablet or a computer or whatever. But the RT hasn't got it. And they've now... What they call it? It's now Surface 2, isn't it? The RT's gone, hasn't it? The word RT.
Has it? They've changed it for Surface 2.
It's Surface 2 and Surface Pro. And people are still going to buy it going... Well, it's what, £400 or whatever, same price on an iPad. And they're going to go, yeah, I'm going to buy that. And then I've got the Paint Shop Pro or my Photoshop CS3 from 2007. I'm going to try and install it, and it's not going to have it. Because that's the confusing part, because Microsoft don't tell the users what's the difference between RT and Windows Pro.
So why can't you put legacy software on RT?
Because the only thing you can install from RT is from the App Store. Because the ARM architecture doesn't allow you to install the x86 programs.
Got you.
So people are going to go and buy it and go, oh, Windows tablet. Oh, yeah, I've got, like, God, shed loads. I've got Office 97.
Have you had sight of a Surface 2 yet, Paul?
No. I've had a fair sight of an RT from the previous version. We saw a Dell XPS 11, and literally, it does come with Office. It's great, great. You get a tablet with Office on it. That's fantastic. But the problem is when you go to Office, you go into desktop mode. And the one thing Microsoft haven't done is optimize the desktop for Office for touch. So you can still you're still touching like a 5 millimeter square thing to close a window or a 2 millimeter square to hit file save. And it's like, well, you've got it wrong. What they should have done is keep what they call Metro separate from what they call the desktop. If they'd have come out and said Metro, we're not allowed to call it Metro, we're meant to call it the modern interface.
What are they going
to
do? Sue you? Bollocks. It's Metro. Yeah,
well, bollocks to you. You cocked it up, all right? Yeah. Hey, Microsoft, this is me. Going on record, you cocked it up, all right?
I tell you what, I'd love to know how many of the devices which they haven't sold are sitting around in warehouses or just being scrapped off.
I can tell you exactly how many are sitting down, but they had to write down $900 million.
Is that how much they had to write down to it? If they wrote that down, is that their cost? So it could be a lot more than you think.
That's their cost, yeah, not retail. More.
Well, that's probably on units didn't sell. It's probably on, you don't even include
it. Disappeared.
Yeah, but they did the same on the Kin as well. The Kin was their idea of a mobile phone.
That was like 2 weeks.
Yeah, but then the RT is absolutely cock-up. And then they released the RT as a Windows 8.1 update, and they cocked that up so badly they had to really revoke the update, didn't they? Because it bricked everyone's device. So they've got no, they just stick with the x86 architecture because it's absolutely ridiculous. The ARM based kind of operating system that Microsoft's trying to push out, they should leave it alone. They haven't got there yet.
Princess Bagel's taking the piss out of me on Twitter, saying that I believe that her husband is the only other person in the world who uses a Surface, according to British Tech.
He probably is, but he's a really nice bloke, and I like him, so I'm not going to say
he's a good guy, yeah. But if the slipper fits, Alan, or the other surface fits on the other foot.
But it's absolute it's crap. It's absolute crap.
Solent Boater has one. I got him wrong last week, by the way. I credited Thames Boater with my strimmer thing for my beard, and it's Solent Boater. He's changed his name, sneaky bastard. So there you go. Do apologise.
Is he on the south coast then?
Thames Boater, follow at Solent Boater. Yeah, he's moved because he was on the River Thames, but now he's in the Solent. So
a good man.
That's what they do on. That's what they do.
Living
on
the
boats,
life on a boat. That's what I want to do. Throw it all. Do me Richard Perry.
Met a pair actually on the Grand Union. It's 5 years they've been living on a boat. 5 years. Wow. Sold his house, got a boat, that's it.
Don't blame him. Google I.O. conference was started, and Vic Gundotra got out on stage last night in a warehouse and started talking about Google+. There's improvements to Hangouts, which should be rather nice, and on-air Hangouts particularly, start times, scheduling, and publication. There's also a whole pile of stuff for photographers. They've updated Snapseed, and I've got to say, the HDR stuff in Snapseed looked pretty impressive. Looked pretty good. And also, they've got automated features now. So if you take a run of images on burst mode, they'll make a GIF out of it, an animated GIF, automatically. Mm. They'll sense the time of exposures and the run-on of shutter speed, and they'll make it into this thing. Now, also what they'll do is if they sense that there's motion across the frame and the rest of the frame is still, they'll produce a multi-exposure. So you'll get, if you're skipping across the frame, you'll have multiple images of you skipping across the frame whilst the background stays static. But based on the fact that they've managed to recognise that motion, what they've also done is then the ability to recognise any motion in a static movement. And if you put the strip out and eraser feature in, what happens is it gives you the image with all motion removed. So anyone else that's in the frame who's moved at all during the shot or any of those shots is stripped out, just like Stax does in Photoshop. And if you upload stills and video on the same day in a chronological order, they'll automatically make a movie for you with music added, and you can change the music if you want. You can delete scenes if you want, and that automatically goes onto your Google+. And here's the best bit. Everything that you upload to Google+ from today onwards is uploaded at full file size and full resolution, video or stills.
Well, they had to do something, didn't they? Because are we all using Google?
That sounds like, bollocks. If that's the best they can do, they had to do something, didn't they?
No. It is, but are we, I think a couple of weeks ago, they go, are we all using app.net? Are we bollocks? But Google Plus really does need to drag us all in, doesn't it? Because we're still using Twitter, aren't we? I think for the communities, we're pretty good in BTN using the community and that, but Google Plus is actually a really good social network. It's better than Facebook. I think it's a lot better than a lot of things out there, but I think we really do need to have a reason to kind of go there, don't we?
That's the point. And the reason people go to places is because the people they know are somewhere.
Exactly.
And that's the problem with Facebook, you see. Everybody's in Facebook. For those people, you know, they'll only go to Facebook because their friends are there. So it's only you. I think you'll reach a peak in places like Google Plus, an app.net as well, until people move across. But they're not going to move across now from Twitter and the likes of Facebook to Google Plus and from Twitter over to app.net because they've found the place they want to be where they can interact online, and that's it. You've got to have a major, major issue, I think, with Facebook and Twitter for the vast majority of those people to move, and that's what those people want them to do, so they can make more money.
Well, Google Plus is better than Facebook.
I'm not saying it's not. But the problem is, it's where the people are, where they deem their friends are, and where they feel they've got good interaction. Google Plus is brilliant, but
My mum's on Facebook, so I need someone to hide. I will hide on Google Plus, so that's the place to be. But then the only people I will interact with on Google Plus are BTN people, I would love Google Plus to be my default social network. But at the moment, Twitter does kind of tick all the boxes at the moment. But
did you say tickle all the boxes?
Tickle the boxes, yes. But Twitter, without doing any work, still captivates us, doesn't it?
Yeah, because, but I think it's because it's easy, isn't it? It's instant and it's easy, and there's a lot of famous people on there, and that's the problem. There's a few people at work that are now going, "Oh, I'm on Twitter now," and they're talking about it, and I'm sitting there shaking my head, laughing away, because you know I've been on Twitter since 2008, and I think I'm almost done it now. I don't go on there as much as I used to.
I don't follow anyone famous on Twitter.
No, nor do I. But new people coming on do.
No, but I think as a communication tool, it's great, because me and you had a great chat on DM a few weeks ago about his MacBooks and things, and I think a thing like that is great.
It is my preferred method of communication, without a doubt. I mean, Twitter is the easiest thing to pick up and instantly chat, and I only want the interaction. So I've got a couple of people that I follow that I know don't follow me back, and I couldn't care less, because I just enjoy what they write. But yeah, a lot of people, I just, if they want to talk to me, as soon as they have a conversation with me that's at any level, you know, social, I'll just immediately follow back. And that's that, because I'm into the social aspect of it. But I think Google is getting far easier to interact with, because the apps are good. The Google Plus application is brilliant for iOS. And there's third-party ones. That's the only problem with the Windows platform, is that all the ones that are there, there's a couple of really good ones, but they're third-party apps, and you just kind of feel a bit dirty giving up your password to a third-party app in Windows.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That's the only problem. But, I mean, Google Plus, the functionality of Google Plus is improving. The interaction with Google Plus is improving. The numbers of people who have got access to Google Plus and who are engaged in Google Plus is good. I mean, if you look at our communities page that Carl Madden runs for us, you know, we've got 260 people following on the Max feed, and I think there's 200 plus on the Big feed. So, you know, there's a lot of people in there who are interacting with us on a regular basis. You post them up, you get replies.
I think that's the good thing about Google Plus. It does gets people involved. And it gets people reacting. We found that over at MyMac that, you know, we tried Facebook and we pushed Facebook and we tried and tried, and people just didn't interact with it. Whereas some of those same people actually automatically started reacting and talking to us and interacting with us on Google Plus.
Facebook is just noise, basically. You're filtering
it. It's certainly becoming that way. I mean, I use it to a degree, but I don't use it. Very much, really, if I'm honest. I actually use it to kind of see what my kids are doing, to be honest with you.
Then Google Plus is kind of that thing where you kind of just go and you can have actually a structured conversation. Like this week, I kind of I put a review of Mavericks for OS 10, and I was talking to Teresa on that, and she was asking for advice on kind of installing and cleaning installs and all that sort of thing. You can actually have a proper structured conversation.
You're not limited on characters. But, I mean, there is a negative to that, though, as well, Paul, isn't there? I mean, if you look at, let's say you're in Twitter and someone posts a funny video of a kitten falling off a sofa, it's a piece of piss to ignore it. Whereas when it's on Google+, it's big, it's in your face. And if you've not got a lot of people that you interact with, it sits on your timeline for bloody ever. You can't get rid of it.
But that's because no one's posting, isn't it? Exactly.
That was
the app.net problem, wasn't it?
Cyber Paul in the chat room says, "I've got different friends on different social media networks." Thank you, Dexter.
Are you my friend, Paul?
Yeah. I've been told I look like Dexter.
Google is working at forcing everyone who is using any Google service to start using Google Plus, says Belt. And he says he's not on Google Plus, but you should be, mate. The only thing I would say is just watch who you follow. I don't use my normal timeline as being the way forwards. What I tend to do is look at the communities. I think the communities page has been a huge leap forward for Google Plus. That's the immense part for me. As soon as I get onto Google, I don't go to Google Plus and look at the timeline. I go to Google Plus and I look straight at the communities. Plain and simple.
We lost Paul.
Yeah, he's just flipped off and then flipped back on again now. Let's pause it there and give him another call.
tell you what, that chill has kicked in.
It has. He's run to the toilet. He's doing the flubberloo at the minute.
Yeah, chilly out. Yeah, very good, Windrider. Yeah. Oh, he's really gone.
Bat Winch has just sent me a tweet saying, am I still on for the big show tomorrow night? it's now, you dozy bin. I did say, I'm sure I saw. Oh,
Bob. Bailing on me.
Oh, I've been all right with it.
Yeah, no.
I'm on Mavericks as well, and I had a fail earlier, so perhaps it is.
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
No, when we were doing the show last Friday, Skype Maverick failed. It just gave up me again.
Well, now you say that, actually, I'm thinking Skype's all right, but actually I'm not. I'm looking at virtual versions of you on other machines, so I'm not using Skype on the Mac at the moment.
No, I don't think Skype's caught a Maverick. Gaz, you had a fail on Maverick, have you?
Well, earlier tonight, yeah. Skype. Well, firstly, you couldn't see me. Ewan couldn't see me as being live. Then I failed out. It just jumped out, so, and I couldn't get the video going, so... The only thing that's linking us is Mavericks and Skype.
Hello?
Oh, well.
Hello?
Yep. Oh, we had a sound failure earlier on as well.
Yeah.
Mavericks and Skype. There you go.
During the Mac show.
Not my cool thing.
Yeah. There you go. I was just saying that what I was saying before you blipped off there, Paul, was that I don't use my timeline so much anymore in Google+. I tend to go straight to the communities.
Yeah. Yes.
That's definitely where the bigger interaction is.
It is.
But I do it all on Twitter because I like that kind of short kind of interaction. That's the best kind of thing.
I find Twitter easier to ignore.
Well, no, it's not the easiest to ignore kind of thing. It's kind of relevant to the time that you post. Because you kind of get you do it, I do it, it's all Gazda. You wake up and you go, morning all, and everyone goes, yeah, morning. No, that's that kind of thing. Facebook's kind of that thing where it sticks around forever.
Morning's evening.
Yeah, you know, it is more like a proper interactive conversation, and I prefer that more than anything. So Google+ doesn't lend itself to that because there's not that many people on there. So, you know, who could ever make a kind of dominant social network? There isn't one, is there, really?
No.
You're either Facebook or you're Twitter. Because the users, you know, we all, yeah, I'm sure all the BTN listeners all kind of gave app.net a try when there was a free thing, but none of us go on there anymore. It was paid and we gave it a go, but no one cares.
I must admit, I keep trying to use it, but I just find.
App.net?
Yeah.
No, I've given up now. They can have my Twitter and that's it.
Yeah, I keep going on and trying to use it, and then you get a few more, you know, followers, and you follow different people. But it just doesn't work the same as Twitter does, and Facebook doesn't work as well as Google does. Certainly, Google Communities, at least.
Did anyone pay you for app.net here? Hands up.
I did. I did first time round. I haven't now. I've gone out of the paid part. So
I get the free thing again. I couldn't even. Oh, you and well, yeah.
Yeah, no. I wish I hadn't.
Yeah, it's a waste of money.
Well, it's not that you wish you hadn't, and you just feel now that it was a waste of money. I mean, it's, you know, you did it and tried it, and that's fair enough, but I did the same. You know, I'm not going to worry about the money I spent on it because, I took the decision to go with it, but it's certainly not as much of a winner as Twitter is, I don't think.
It's a shame, really, because actually it could have been a far...
Yeah, I agree.
The format was the same, the pretense was the same. If people had flocked to it... And to a certain degree, I think what they've done is they've charged too much there. What they should have done was open it up to everyone, get the users in and say, look, £5, you get no ads.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Done.
Yeah, we discussed it last week, though, because Twitter's getting filled up with ads, but it doesn't get in the way of you telling people what you want to say, because between the three of us right now...
Sorry, did you say Twitter's getting filled up with ads?
Yeah, because we discussed on the big show last week that
I don't see any.
I don't see any ads.
Well, that was the kind of thing where you see them is it we're talking about Tweetbot 2 and all that, Tweetbot 3, whatever it was, and we were saying is it about you see the odd here and there, but I'm sure between the three of us we're very self-promotionalists, aren't we? Yeah, we've all got something to push online, haven't we? You know.
No.
Because our identities are online, aren't they?
Well, I'll generally say, no, I haven't.
No, my social interaction's online. I don't do it. Yeah. I don't talk on Twitter just to promote this network.
No. But we do a lot of our... I'll take it as an example. Sunday morning, I spoke to you and Gaz online for the Grand Prix, didn't we? We all chatted online for the Grand Prix. And it is our main form of social communication, isn't it?
Yeah, if I get your friends.
I'm not going to ring you up, mate.
You can give me a ring, Gaz. I'll give you a number. Yeah. I mean, Booker, 07999.
Booker in the chat room says the promoted tweets on Twitter are pretty unobtrusive.
They are.
I haven't seen any, that's why. Yeah. the only thing that bothers me is whether people are actually tweeting stuff out under your handle without you knowing. Because Ian Botham, there was a tweet came out the other week. Someone said, oh, you've been hacked, Ian. And he said, what? And it clearly wasn't him that had sent that tweet out. So whether he had been hacked or whether it was just Twitter's promotional element using his number of followers to send out a message they want, that's a worrying trend. People are saying things that I'm not saying. That really bothers me.
I was just going to say, is that where the ads are coming from then? Have you hit the nail on the head that they're using those big names to send out the ads specifically? And that's why we're not seeing much, because we don't follow any big stars.
Yeah, but that thing I said a couple of weeks ago is when the old Comic-Con thing where people were authenticating against the app for the Comic-Con app, where Comic-Con were actually posting on their behalf. So I think they think that actually people actually endorsing things are more important than actually corporations and companies promoting things on their behalf. That's probably the most... They always talk about these kind of advertising things. It's actually more important that a person endorses a product than the company.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, I'd agree with that.
Booker in the chat room says, seen third-party contests that will tweet using your name if you agree to their terms. Nasty crap.
Yeah.
Got to go, night-night, says Paul. Night-night, Paul. Night-night. Sleep tight.
But I went to the Gadget Show in 2012... And before any of the kind of, you're going to go there going, oh, I want your freebies, but Samsung and a lot of the people would only actually let me have any of their freebies if I could log into one of their devices and actually like their Facebook page or tweet on their behalf.
Do they not think that people are going to get coy on this and have pseudonyms as well? So they can do exactly that under a pseudonym. I mean... I've got more than one Twitter account, and but I don't use the others. But I've just got them in. I don't know why. I just got a few accounts to start off with, but I'm now seriously thinking of making sure that I get a couple of other accounts in Facebook and in Google Plus as well.
So your naked teenage selfies.
No. But I think that they con people into doing this sort of thing by offering the freebies, aren't they? Because if you look at my Google Plus photograph, there's a picture of me at the Gadget Show last year with a bottle of wine and a Gadget Show magazine going, oh, look at me, I'm so cool. And I'd had a bottle of wine, and I was going up to him going, yeah, you can have my Facebook
kind of like
account.
Now.
You can have my Facebook account, yeah, fine. Here, have my Twitter account. And I was, because I want your wristband. I want your crap Samsung thing.
What you'll do for a bit of alcohol,
I think,
Paul?
Actually, that
know what I'm going to do.
Go on, Gaz.
Is he going to eat another chili?
Oh, maybe.
Don't.
They know that they people that are going to give them real life accounts. That's the problem, isn't it? That's the issue with it.
Yeah. Belts in the chat room says, "Isn't that Google Plus's new ad structure now? They can use your profile for advertisements if you don't opt out." So. Good point.
Tip of the day.
But going into kind of personal kind of stuff, and I don't know if this is going off tangent kind of thing.
Doesn't stop agreeing.
The crypto virus.
Go on.
It's been covered big on the Twitter network this week, and talking about personal kind of stuff. Have you heard about it?
No, go ahead.
So obviously there's a virus that's going around. So obviously you get a personal email that's got a bit, it basically comes with a zip file, so you've got a UPS delivery or you've got an HMRC kind of.
That's a bit old hat, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an old hat, but the virus that comes with it is nasty as hell. Basically, what it does at the moment, and talking about the way that people use their personal kind of emails and their social networks, this virus actually encrypts anything on any network attached storage. So basically, yeah. If you get the virus, it'll encrypt all of your personal files. But if it finds a network attached storage on your network, say if you've got a NAS or anything, it will actually encrypt that as well. And obviously, I work for an organization. We've had it encrypt things on network storage. We've got the facility to restore that kind of data. But the fact that people have this kind of trust in social networks and things, and these things come through as Facebook kind of messages and all that, it's kind of dodgy, really, because people don't realize that their data is actually that vulnerable.
Yeah, so basically what they then send an email to them, you know, basically saying your I think it's automated, isn't it? So if you do not pay up and they don't give you the key because you haven't paid within a certain time period, it then basically deletes all of your personal data.
Well, it's $300, and if you don't pay up within 72 hours, I think it is, they actually delete the encryption keys. But the problem is the FBI are now going around encrypting the keys and taking the servers down. So if you pay your $300,
you can't get it anyway. Yeah.
So as a thing right here now, as a friend of the network, if you've got any kind of NAS storage on your network, disconnect it.
Make yourself a tin hat and hide under the bed.
Well, basically, you've got to have a disconnected backup. That's what you've got to do. You've got to make sure you back up and have a disconnected backup.
But it is that kind of thing where you're saying people are being trusting with kind of social networks and kind of that sort of thing where, you know, like I say, I work in an enterprise network environment and I encourage people over the years to email me when they get something that's dodgy. And one of the worst ones is the UPS virus, where they get a you're expecting it a delivery.
Yeah, and they're surprisingly accurate at times. I've had ones where I've been waiting for UPS deliveries.
Yeah,
yeah,
and they come in and they're very convincing.
So that tells you that they're actually getting that data from somewhere to be able to put those emails out. Because if you're not expecting, you're likely to spot it straight away. But if you're expecting a parcel. Bingo, I gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I spend my time educating my users. There is this UPS virus going around, kind of, don't touch it, and they don't. But, you know, the rest of the world, there's that thing where everyone who buys a new laptop, they get Office on it, and they get, like, a virus kind of McAfee on it. But Office runs that in 3 months. McAfee runs it in 6 months. But they don't actually get a warning saying that that it's going to actually run out, you know. And so basically after 6 months, they have no virus scanner. So there is so much out there saying that the people aren't protected. I'd probably say 50% of the actual population aren't actually protected against viruses at all.
There's a comment from Booker in the chat room. I've got an external backup drive, and it only gets plugged into the network when I'm backing up. No other time. So,
yeah, he does what I do. Good
precaution, mate.
No, he does what I do. My NAS is only plugged in when it needs to back up. but this virus is nasty.
But you're a bit screwed if you're using a NAS to serve movies etc. across your network.
Yeah, but I think there is some kind of clarity in actually having a separate backup, like you say, he says, that's not turned on all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this new virus is nasty, because we've seen it across our enterprise network, and if it is network attack storage device, there is no one who can actually recover that data. There is no expert who can recover that data. It is not.
No, they've apparently done the encryption really, really well.
Yeah. So it's proper nasty. So, you know, what education is there for the average user out there to go get their data back? It's horrible.
Yeah.
You know, photos, videos, all that sort of thing. It's horrible. You know, it's actually frightening. You know, us guys, you know, between the three of us, you know, are we all backing up to a secure storage? I think we all are, aren't we?
I'm not using network attached storage.
I do three things. I basically back up to I do Time Machine backup because I'm on a Mac. I do a linked clone to my drive, but I also do another backup to a device which is a piece of hardware which is taken off site periodically. Yeah. So I could have a certain period of data where I'm going to lose out, but I do have a device which is separate from the machine and not always on, as it were.
But I am talking to two Mac users here, aren't I?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not a Mac problem at the moment, but obviously with the Windows network, it's very easy to map a network drive on a Windows device. Basically, this virus, if it sees it, it encrypts it. And it's nasty. You know.
Is there any AV software that's picking this up yet?
No. Because it is one of those problems where it is the user initiating and it's a PDF.exe file.
Yeah.
And so basically at the point that you execute it, AV software hasn't got a choice.
Yeah.
Hasn't right. got a chance. So it is like the old I think last year with the Mac virus. It is the user who invokes the virus.
Yeah, first line of defense and all that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for cheering us up, Paul.
Did you see the GPS bullet story?
I didn't.
So, think of your latest James Bond movie, right? Or any of them. And he wants to find out where the baddies are going, and they're losing him in a car chase, but he shoots them in the back. But his bullet is encrypted with a GPS homing device. And then he can open up a screen in his car, and he can watch them driving off and see where they end up stopping, and then they can call in an airstrike. Yep.
Move.
It's been done. GPS bullets are real. And you're thinking, okay, so scientists have got one to work in a lab or something like that, and they know where Fred went to the toilet carrying it or something like that. No. GPS bullets are now being issued to US and British police. They can shoot fleeing vehicles in order to track them. They're designed to make high-speed chases safer. The pursuing vehicle presses a button. This is on the gear lever, no doubt. A lid pops open and a GPS bullet is fired straight forward into the car that they are pursuing. The car can then be tracked from a distance in real time without the need for a high-speed pursuit.
Did I hear you right? He flips up the lid on his gear stick.
He flips up... No.
Were you making that up?
No. The story says the police car presses a button and a lid pops open and a GPS bullet is fired, which comes back to the fleeing car. And I just postulated it might be on the gear lever.
Yeah, okay, all right, okay.
But I think that's really pretty cool. What a great idea. You just shoot a vehicle from a distance, and that's it. Off you go. Sit back, wait till they stop. Be good for joyriders as well, wouldn't it? Because you see where they all piled out, and then you just get the helicopter to follow them.
So that's it. James Bond is actually fantasy. It's actually proper fiction now, isn't it?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, if you look at you know, what leads forwards to everyday life. So you look at F1. F1 leads to actual use of car safety. And James Bond films and Star Trek and things like that have led forwards to actuality in real life with stuff as well. It's an inspiration.
Yeah, because they're actually interviewing the chap who wanted to be the president of the FIA at the weekend, weren't they? The British chap, and he was saying about how it fills down to... Because the way airbags work and that sort of thing, all fills down to how kind of normal cars work, don't they? So... It's always going to be the way, you know, in GPS, I'm sure a lot of things that James Bond, the things that your mobile phone can do, are far beyond what James Bond could ever do, aren't they?
I've got to say, I preferred Wind Rider when he used to drink, because he's gone all frigging sensible now.
What's he done?
He's corrected me, because they're GPS bullets in inverted commas, you see. So he said, American police forces use via compressed air gun that's mounted on the car. They're sticky GPS patches, and they're just like sticky pellets, really, not bullets.
Oh, well, that's crap.
You boring bastard, Pete.
Is he smiling? Because he's not smart this week.
Oh, no, mate. Actually, Pete's had a little bit of a slip down the stairs, and his crook knee is crooker. So get well, mate. We're thinking of you.
Give me Pete. Give me a smile.
Just stop being such... Booker, he's called them GPS boogers. GPS bogeys. Just stop being such a grumpy bastard, eh, Pete?
Oh, I want the picture on Twitter of Wind Rider smiling.
But get well soon. Get well soon, Pete. Paul wants a picture of you smiling, mate.
Yeah, come on, please.
Yeah, he's more likely to get a black latte from a coffee shop.
He called me something this week.
What did he call you?
I can't say it, yeah.
He does come out with some good swear words, I have to say. He's a good lad.
I love the bloke.
Did you bring a story then, Paul? Have we done yours?
Just on the Maverick thing. I know we're in Apple Free Zone. I know we are.
Yeah, we're in Apple Free Zone.
But I did the trick. I put it on Twitter this week. I did the thing where I went to a third party website, and I downloaded the trial of iWork.
Right.
Then decided to reinstall my MacBook, and I then got the free version of the upgrade.
You stole from Apple.
I did not steal from Apple. It's apparently free from new versions, and I did not steal anything. I installed a trial version, which then updated to the premium version. But Apple's kind of assault on the... And obviously, you caught me off guard, obviously, on stories with the 2 minutes to go. So this is my story. But I have been thinking about it. Apple's assault on the kind of enterprise market with kind of the productivity apps is probably actually a very aggressive one. Because I've been using Pages, Keynote, and Numbers for the last few days, especially with the online versions. But actually, it's actually a very, very good assault, because Pages is a very efficient version of Word, Numbers, Excel, and Keynote of PowerPoint. But they've actually done a very good job of making it free for everyone.
It's not meant to be free for everyone, though.
Well, it's not meant to be free for everyone, but I have a free copy. Well, I got my iPhone 5. Oh, a couple of weeks ago, and I've got the free iOS versions. But that collaboration kind of thing is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah,
because I can edit a document on my Mac, and I can get my iPad Mini, and I can get my phone. I can edit them. That's absolutely fantastic. And obviously, Microsoft's going to kind of all in the Office 365 kind of thing. Does Microsoft? The kind of dominance that Microsoft has on the Office thing, is that now dwindling? Because there are so many things out there, Google Docs, all that sort of thing. They really haven't got such a hold of anything, have they?
Well, I think Apple had to play this game. And they've done a double whammy there, haven't they? They've swept Google's free services under the carpet for themselves as well. So they've had a go with Google, say, right, okay, Google can do it, so can we. So if you use a Mac, you don't have to go and use any other services, you can use our services. And then to put the OS out there as free as well, they're basically saying to Microsoft, put that in your pipe and smoke it. You've got to have the hardware to make your money. You can't just do it all on software. And they're also saying, apparently at the recent quarterly earnings call, that they're going to be giving the OS away in perpetuity. Now, yeah. I'm not sure they can say that, but that's what they've hinted at. So
it's one of those things. Once it's gone. They can't turn around.
Well, they can't, Ewan. But if they had a major problem and the business went AWOL, they'd have to try again and start up again. To say that. But moving forward, they've definitely got the aim that, as far as everyone's concerned, OS doesn't cost you anything, if you're going to buy one of our devices. And that's, so they've had a swipe at Microsoft there, and they certainly had a swipe at Microsoft because they used the 365 analogy. They couldn't have a go at Google because their services are free, of course, but they certainly had a go at Google with at Microsoft in their keynote because obviously it costs.
That anyone who had a pirated copy of iWork got a free upgrade.
And I've also heard that people that had Aperture trials also got free uploads. But let's be honest. What's the percentage of that? It's probably a speck on their, on Tim Cook's glasses. He's really not going to be worried about that. And this takes them forward through that process. They don't have to worry about this going forward, do they?
The money's on the hardware, because the problem I have is in the environment I work in, we have bought a lot of iPads.
Right.
A hell of a lot of iPads, Probably the amount of iPads we have bought is probably comparable to the amount of laptops we've bought. And the first question I get asked is, where do I put the USB stick? And you're like, oh, for God's sake. you don't do that, but we have invested in technology that molds our enterprise market into that. That makes the iPad actually a really credible kind of thing. And
well, it's the consistency that gives it to them, isn't it? It's the consistency of applications, it's the consistency of product. And that's obviously why they're trying to keep the iPad 2 around as well, because of that 30-pin connector for education.
Yeah, but it's the thing that I want to edit a Word document. The Word document isn't actually a thing anymore.
No.
It's a format.
It's like a Hoover.
It's like a Hoover, sellotape, God knows what,
I tweeted a few weeks ago I was Dysoning the house.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're absolutely right. And you can edit.
Which means you've only got 6 months before it falls over.
But we buy, up until now, we've bought QuickOffice. It's 13 quid as an app in the enterprise market because they can log into our Mobile Echo account and get their central file stores and that sort of thing, and they can edit documents and that sort of thing. But now, basically, every new iPad we buy has got iWork, Keynote, pages, numbers, everything. So we can edit all the Microsoft documents online. And I'll tell you what, as that kind of goes on, so many more people are just going to go, stuff the laptop, iPad. Because I can do everything I can do, because we have a system to link into our kind of central storage unit. We can edit documents, save them back to our central storage unit, and get on. And they're going to go, I don't need Office anymore. I don't need a Windows computer anymore. I need that MacBook Air. The new MacBook Air, which was 12 hours battery life, now with Mavericks is now an hour and a half extra. And that actually is a great selling point.
Gaz, did you have another story for us, mate?
Well, I've got a couple. I've got two, and I'm just trying to contemplate which one. Let's go for this one. Because we have been talking about tablets, and this is a piece from the BBC again, because... Ewan probably said at the start of the show, we completely forgot that it was tonight. But anyway, that aside, this is how to make your TV a touchscreen. Now, the majority of this story is about a video. It's a video from somebody called LJ Rich, who I've seen in other technology shows. She's talking about how to make your large TV screen into a touchscreen product, and it only costs $75 or 50 quid to do this.
I am struggling to believe this.
Well, you'd have to watch the video to see it. It's about a minute 40 seconds long, and it does actually create the capacity for your screen to be, your TV to be, a touch-enabled device. However, obviously, there are not a lot of applications available for you to make this a usable process. And I'm still really, really, really struggling as to why anybody would want, one, either a computer monitor, or two, a TV to be touch-enabled. I still don't get it. And I'm just trying to work out why you'd want fingerprints all over your screen, you know, on especially on your TV. Why you'd want somebody standing in front of it. You know, I just don't get it. I still don't get it.
But eventually, people would create a surface that didn't mark, didn't smear, that kind of stuff. And you got to say, going up to your Apple TV as an iOS device and touching what you actually wanted to watch, as opposed to having to skip along using the front row interface and passwords, you could hit the screen instead of, well, it'd be far better.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. Yeah, I kind of get it for that, but I still think that the use case for it is the much better use case is to have a touch pad, whether it be Apple's, whether it be, you know, whoever makes them, you know, Microsoft's RT devices, it's still a much better experience to be able to control that touchscreen capability on your large screen via a tablet of some sort. And there seems to be a drive to get large screens to be touch enabled, and I'm still not with it. I still don't get it. I know what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying in that use case, but I still think it. I just don't understand why the drive is there to have these enabled. I don't get it. I'm old school, I suppose.
Yeah,
it doesn't really work. Going to be really nerdy right now. Where we work, we do kind of four-dimensional imaging, where we're kind of taking images of cells, and we kind of not only look at cells, we kind of rotate them, we look inside them. There is no kind of touch interface that actually works with, so we kind of use kind of virtual reality, that kind of thing. But there is no kind of affordable touch interface that actually gives us that kind of expandability. I think the kind of touch interface is more kind of entertainment-based at the moment, isn't it?
That's where the market will be, yeah.
Yeah.
Porn as well.
Yeah. Now I understand.
Well, sorry, I didn't realise the level we were at.
So twiddling those knobs. Oh.
Sorry, I was being nerdy and scientific, so, you know, we were at porn, yes. Yeah, they're swiping, swiping, swiping again.
I want a 55-inch Surface tablet.
Yeah.
What they have on CNN. Yeah, no, the Sky Pad is pretty cool.
That's the one, Peter. He's put the link into the show notes.
Yeah.
But the only kind of touch interface we have is Windows 8, isn't it? Really? On a large screen?
Yes.
It's all we have, and pretty it's much. Not suitable, because as soon as we want to drop into a decent app, it's going to drop to desktop, and then it turns to crap.
Yeah, you've got to have the right application for it to work with it.
Yeah, because that's it.
That's the thing. You've got to have it. But I still think that getting up and I mean, that's why we had remotes, so we didn't have to get up and start pressing the buttons on a TV. Now they're gonna have touch screens where you've got to get up and start touching the screen instead. Mm. You know, it's got to be for other use cases. It's definitely got to be for other use cases. It's not for the home, because people, when they sat down on watching it, they don't have to get up to touch the screen and turn the damn thing over.
We spent years getting away from that.
Yeah.
My father started trying to get me to change the channel for him.
Either of you tried the motion swipe on the Kinect on the Xbox?
No.
Actually, pretty good.
Good.
So you're sitting there and you've got the Kinect on top of your TV and you're sitting there, you can swipe left, swipe right, and that sort of thing. Actually, it works pretty well. And that's a pretty Minority Report kind of thing.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, no, it actually works pretty well. Along your lighting's kind of right and all that sort of thing. It works pretty well. But then no one's doing anything with it, because you think that Kinect's been out, 2 years? And Microsoft hasn't built any of that into Windows 8, have they? So if you can imagine, you've got your Windows 8 kind of media center.
I must admit, but I thought that they would do a lot more with that. You saw an awful lot of action to start off with people using those devices to do all sorts of crazy things. And they didn't seem to, you know, to drive it into the place where they're going to get the best buck for the, you know, for the change. And that was into home use and domestic use. And they don't seem to be coming up with anything.
They didn't do anything with it. Cause like my daughter plays a game called Sonic Free Riders on the Xbox, which is kind of, you put your hand out to skip and you can go round and round, and you can move things left to right and that sort of thing, and she's absolutely so natural with it. You think you're building up a whole new market. You could be a whole new market. These kids who are 8 or 9 years old, and they can swap things across, and they haven't, they're building the Xbox. They actually haven't built it into Windows, which is the kind of day-to-day interface that you use every day.
You've got to say, the lack of Kinect interface on the Windows 8 platform is ridiculous.
Crazy.
Why haven't we seen a Windows, Windows laptops? They've got one they pull out, they twist around, and you can take the bloody thing out, and you can plug it in. Why is there a Windows 8 tablet with Kinect built into the camera? Why is there no Windows 8 tablet?
Foot and gun. That's what they've got. Yeah. Absolutely. Foot and gun.
Screwed that up completely,
Now then.
They missed an opportunity because they had the technology they already had. Why could they not miniaturize that technology as the point that Windows 8 was released and then say, hey, you can sit back from your TV in your front room and use your hand to navigate Windows tiles? Not there.
That would be good. Paul, do you spray your chilies with MSG?
Go on, Mike.
No, it's all right. You watch this show back, mate, when you've had a chance. You'd be horrified.
I don't watch these shows back.
Now then, if you are Cecilia Abadi, you hold a very special place in history today. You got a traffic ticket. And here's the traffic ticket. There we go. Now, is it because Cecilia was speeding? No, she was only doing 65 miles per hour. Is it because she was doing something else stupid? Not really, apart from the fact she was wearing her Google Glass. Cecilia Abadi is the first person ever in the world to get a ticket for using Google Glass. It comes from the California Highway Code, and it's a breach of it for using a visible display monitor whilst driving. There you go. Other than a sat-nav. She's tweeted out, apparently, looking for a bit of sympathy and someone to go and shove it up the California State Highway Patrol thing. But she's been met with is derision. There you go. She's the first one. Congratulations, Cecilia.
Yeah. Welcome to real life.
This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UGate 2. They're bloody marvellous. We couldn't live without them. They're just wonderful. You guys are buying tons of service off them. Thank you very much. Big thank you from Andy at UGate 2 as well, because you're buying a lot of service and saying how good they are. Thank you, guys, for spoiling the advert for the customer. It's either you or Swagger. if you would like anything to do with the web, co-location services, hosting, domain names, etc., etc., just go to uk2.net. They're brilliant. Site builder is just phenomenal. Absolutely easy as pie. One click and you can be set up with a web page that will actually do e-commerce as well as. So give them a check out and see what you can come with. Use our offer codes. Go through our website. You get great discounts. You probably won't beat anyone else on price. And we love them to bits. So please support UK2 because they support us. We couldn't afford to do the podcast without them. Right then, it's time for the cool thing.
Oh, Jesus.
Based on the fact I've leapt on you two tonight, have you got a cool thing, or should we do that tomorrow night instead?
Tomorrow? What's going on tomorrow?
The cool thing only.
Guess what? I'll tell you what, I'm going to... This is really old man syndrome.
Go on, mate. Werther's Originals.
No, they're not Werther's... LED lights. Okay?
Go on.
Now, I'm not condoning this particular make, but... let's move it up. I don't know if it'll keep focus. Will it keep focus?
Go on, yeah.
Right, yeah. So...
GU10.
GU10s, right. I've got... A lot of people have got GU10s in their kitchen. Right, and they always burn out on me. Always burn out. Now I've had LED lights in there for must be about 6 months now, possibly longer. No problems. Like that, you always got the previous ones which said they'd last so long, and they never do. But the LEDs, they've lasted, no problem. they're now at a stage where they put out enough lumens to be worth it. You know, you've got to be looking at about, I think it's about anywhere between 250 and 300 lumens is what you're looking for. These are 6 watt, and they put out the same light, and it's a much clearer light as well. You can actually get some really good light coming out of these. And the old ones were 50 watt. So, you know, there you go. It's 44 watts that I'm saving on money alone. And you times that up by how many, you think, how you count up how many GU10s you've got in your kitchen.
10.
It starts to add up. There you go. 44 times 10.
700 watts when they were all on. It's now 70 watts.
There you go. There you go. So LED lights, they're now getting to a price where they're worth looking at seriously. So that's my cool thing.
Well,
LED lights.
Though, if you buy a decent quality make, don't buy the cheap ones. Buy the more expensive ones.
That's it.
And if you look at the length of them, I've bought those in our kitchen now. They're 4.5 years old, and I've never replaced one.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
They were like £8 each, but more than paid for themselves.
Yeah. So go for it. Go out and look for them. You know, but get plenty of lumens. Make sure your lumens are up there, because you can't, the cheaper ones, the lumens are low. Make sure you get, you know, the wide angle ones as well. I can't remember what they call them.
I use fluoro saver bulbs in my static lighting. And they're, I think they consume 30 watts each, but their output is 140 watts each. Yeah. And I've got 9 in a ring in the head. They're fantastically bright lights, and they don't consume hardly anything. I've got to say the lamps are a touch expensive. They're £30 each, but they last as long as you don't. I mean, portable. But you know, if you look after them, don't get them knocked about and kicked around. They do.
Just to note, iBookery said that halogens make big heat and it burns out the bulbs first. That's correct. Actually, LEDs can put out quite a lot of heat as well, and that's where the technology is moving on really quickly, because they've got the heat sinks in them and they've got the technology and the chips behind the LEDs to make sure they're not putting out as much heat. But they've got to a point now where I think they're starting to take over halogens, definitely.
Windrider in the chat room says he's got LEDs from Aldi's for $8 Australian. 10-watt LED compares to 60-watt incandescent.
Yeah, it's not the wattage that you really got to compare. It's the lumens that you got to look at. And the lighting industry really needs to move forward on that and start converting people to know what the lumens are of their lighting. Cool thingy, LEDs.
Lumens is a measurement of emitted light, and the lumen is a candle flame, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's effectively it. 60 candle flames, 120 candle flames, 300 candle flames.
Yeah.
Jolly good. Good pick, mate. Like that one. Righty, what have you got for us?
Hello. Well, I'll tell you what the cool thing is. It isn't eating a chili plant for a show. I won't do that again.
No, we have that on video, don't worry.
Yeah, thank you. Obviously, got Tom's on tonight, so... but we're all going to make VPNs and the fact that the Americans and our friends across the pond get things before we do. iTunes and Netflix and things. And there's all sorts of things to exchange DNS and that sort of thing. But I've actually paid for a service called Tunnel Bear. I don't know if anyone's heard of it before, but...
Is that VPN from when you're looking for gay porn?
No, it's not. Tunnel Bear is a really decent VPN service. So if you want to connect to Japan, US, France, South Africa, I think it is. But you haven't got to do anything like all that crap with kind of fiddling with your DNS, all that sort of thing. Literally, it's a downloadable EXE that you can run... And all you do is you turn it on, choose the country you want to be VPN to, and it kind of flicks you in. So with me at home, with a lot of kind of American Netflix kind of thing. But the good thing is they actually give you a gig free bandwidth a month, which is pretty decent, so you can kind of try it out. If you tweet out every month, then you get an extra 500 gig, which is nice. But if you want to use their service, which I do every month, it's actually only £3.19 a month to use their full VPN service. So if you don't want to fiddle with DNS and all that sort of thing, you've got an EXE that you just turn on, turn off when you want it to. Tunnel Bear is actually a really decent VPN. And that's my cool bit. It's on right now.
Good man. No problem at all. We're just telling Batroom, Batwench off in the chat room, because she's just made some silly statement about not understanding Lumen. So we explained it to her, and now she's saying, I do understand the Lumen. I'm not a just because I'm a female. You started it, woman. Don't you dare come around here making silly statements in the chat room, and then when we time to be nice and lay our capes down on the floor, you then give us shit.
No. And then Pete says, are you Tuttle Bear? I heard it from a tweet via Paul. There you go. It works.
Is a Lumen a man who hangs out in a toilet? Yeah.
Are you smiling, Pete? Please tell me you're smiling. Please. Give me a smiley face.
Michael thing. Now, about a year and a half ago, I did this thing, which is the Seagate Go Drive mount, and that has really come into its own in the last sort of few months. I use that no end. I've got 1 terabyte SSDs that I shove in this and use it for backing up data and stuff. It's absolutely indispensable.
I keep thinking about getting one of those. And
get the desktop version if you don't mind linking up to power. You do need external power for this one to work. But the difference is this will only do 2.5 drives. This one does 3.5 drives because it's got the external power. And you get twin Thunderbolt ports on this one as well, so you can daisy chain on. But that one does 3.5 drives, not just the 2.5 drives. Right. So it's great if you've got stuff kicking around. Just to let you know, when I had the Retina MacBook Pro, I did 15 gig of video from the hard drive of the Retina MacBook Pro, which was an SSD, onto this, which was plugged into a Thunderbolt port, and the transfer took 15 gig of video in 42 seconds.
They're both Thunderbolt?
They're both Thunderbolt drives.
Boy.
Thank you. But I now use both of these. The only thing you've got to watch out with these, and I said this today on the Mac show, is your brain can nearly explode trying to figure out the connections so that you don't stymie yourself too early with your endpoint device. And then as well, you're supposed to have, if you've got the NAS, you're supposed to have your monitor as the last thing that you put in, not the first thing that you put in. And then you've got the Retina MacBook Pro's got two outputs for Thunderbox. It's got two controllers. And then trying to not get yourself tied up in a knot with that is just ridiculous. So Thunderbolt, and it only relays. That's why. But that's that one will cost you about £80, and it's worth every penny.
I thought they were reasonable prices.
Yeah, they are. They're all right. But you just take any 2.5 drive and shove it in. Just watch you don't get too much static around it if it's in your bag and it's on material and things like that. I've got a little.
that's probably filth, isn't it?
I got these down at TK Maxx. They're like ladies' purses type things. And you just put your drives in those and zip them up, and it stops them rubbing around and getting static electricity on them.
Right.
But they just put them in there, and you can... Oh, that's where that other Thunderbolt cable went. Who knew? Yeah. But there you go. So they're deadly to use, but that one's £118 off Amazon. But it's well worth it.
That's expensive for a bag, isn't it?
No. I'm talking about the drive.
You've
got a lag on the video.
I know.
Where can we get a hold of you then, Gazmaz?
Nice and easy, Gazmaz on Twitter, so twitter.com/Gazmaz or gazmaz.com, where you can find this and other shows. I normally do a weekly show with a guy called Guy Sir. We call ourselves the G-Men over at My Mac. So my Mac podcast, that's nice and easy.
Yes, there we go. And Mr. Wright, where the hell are you? Sleeping off a hangover in the morning. And wiping a sore ass as well.
You'll find me at all of them on Twitter at BTN and Chili Eaters Anonymous.com.
Go on, mate, have another.
I'm not having another. Jesus Christ, that was bad. It's only just worked this way.
If you want to know what we're talking about, just keep an eye out for the VIP show this weekend. We'll be back again next week, back to Thursday night next week, probably. I did say we were going to move last week for all the people that are giving me shit in the chat room.
Like me.
And we've pissed Batwench off now.
Oh, God, we're done.
We'll see you next week. Love you all.
Bye.
Food and Batwench. Bye.